Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Torres. I'll be your host today. Joined by my co-hosts, Mike Carter and Dave Funnel. Gentlemen, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, good. It's been a good week. Busy week, but a good one.
Yeah. Glad to be, it must be really good.
glad to be back. No, I just it's because I accidentally crossed my legs too hard and I hurt myself a little bit. That's why I was so high pitched.
Yeah. All right. So we got a lot to discuss today. We're going to talk about some beat writer articles, talking about Evan Carter, Jeff McNeil. Got a little Pope talk as well. We're going to be talking about some buy low, sell high players. We'll be going over some crazy bullpen situations. We've got a few listener questions. And as always, we've got our mental health minute. But before we move forward, there's some housekeeping that I think we need to do. And I think anybody who was listening to the show back in March, you probably remember we had quite a debate on the show about whether Mike was going to continue with the show. And what kind of sparked all of that was that Mike missed an episode. I think that one was our Mets episode. And we looked at the download and listen numbers, you know, afterward, and we saw that we broke our personal record without Mike on the show.
It was a big spike.
You know, it was a tough decision, but we decided to move forward. You know, even if that meant we were going to get less listens because Mike is on the show. But now I think we have another data point to look at. And what I mean by that is 2 weeks ago, Mike did, to his credit, he did step up. And he, when me and Dave were not available to do the show that week, he did a solo pod talking about bullpens.
Oh, that was bad.
It was rough.
It was good. Me talking for 45 minutes straight is something that no one needs. I mean, ever, anywhere.
So that was 2 weeks ago. And then last week, Mike couldn't join us. So it was just me and Dave. And I figured this is the best test, right? So we can take a look, and I've got the numbers pulled up here. We can take a look at how many listens and downloads we got with Mike's episode and compare it to the one without him. And I think this will be the definitive answer. So Mike, I don't know, like, how are you feeling as we get ready for the big reveal to see, you know, whether or not you're going to continue on the show?
Well, if we're basing it on how many people listen to my, you know, trash talking about bullpens for 45 minutes compared to when you guys were on and had a great guest as well, which I will add that I helped
line up. I'm already hearing up.
Excuses. Yeah, okay. No, I think if we're basing it on that, I'm guessing I'm done. I'm guessing I'm off the show.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm guessing. I mean, there's gonna be a huge disparity in the numbers between a great show like what you guys did last week and then me just flying solo by myself for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Dave, what are you thinking right now? How do you feel about the possibility that this could be the end for Mike? I mean, I think we can't even continue. We'd have to just say, you know, just cut his mic after, if it turns out that his show didn't do as well.
Yeah, it's difficult because I know that 2 weeks ago we made the sacrifice to give him the spotlight.
Right.
And now it might be something that I don't know if we come to regret that or not. Like we went out of our way to allow him to, you know, talk for 45 minutes. And now, I don't know. I'm a little torn, but
I think if you guys had told me that I was on the line, then I probably would have prepared a little bit differently and would have maybe gone about things a little bit differently. Like, I don't know. Maybe I would have got a Capri Sun and had a cat meowing in the background. maybe I would have tried to make it a little more homey for everybody. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that could have helped the ratings. All right. So, Mike, for your episode, this is using the pitcher list feed, okay? We got 2,262 downloads since that episode was released 2 weeks ago.
So that one itself got 2,262 just those poor people that tuned in expecting to hear all of us talking instead heard me. But that download that goes in my tally, even if three people listen to it.
Bro, this isn't even real. I hadn't looked at the numbers. I deliberately did not look at them because I knew we were going to talk about this. For our episode, we got 2,264 downloads.
Wow.
Two more than yours.
Wow.
Dave, I don't know, man. Like, what do we, is that within the margin of error?
It is. I know that we had, what, five days to accumulate this, whereas Mike had like a week and a half. So, I mean, when you think about it that way, we've got like within the next week, we've got like the sky's the limit.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I wonder if you guys should demand a recount. I mean, that's pretty close. That didn't seem like it should be that close.
That's really wild, man. Like two download difference between that's crazy.
But, yeah. I mean, just considering how superior you guys are to me in most things, it's odd that I was even close. I'm shocked that it was that close.
All right. Because you were that close. And again, I do think that's within the margin of error. We're going to keep you around, Mike. Yeah. We're going to keep you around. I think it's fair enough. You did a good job. I listened to that episode. You did a bang up job there going over bullpens. We're going to keep you around, buddy. All right.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean,
yeah, I'm good with that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I survive another month. Okay. Good stuff.
We'll see you until the next time. And we'll just, you know, have to review. We'll have to maybe do a couple focus groups and really, you know, talk to our PR people.
See. You know what I'm going to do next time I'm by myself? I'm going to light you guys up. It's going to be great. So what I'm going to do is secretly, you guys are going to be like, oh no, I'm too busy. I can't, I got to work. I've got kids, blah, blah, blah. Well, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to get like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or something like that. I'm just going to get somebody completely out of nowhere to come onto the podcast. And they'll be like, wow, Mike's episode got 10,000 downloads. I wonder why. Oh, that's why. That's why. That's the ticket. Now I just got to find a superior guest, a great, great guest.
Yeah.
That we've never had, you know, and all of our guests have been great. I don't mean it that way, but I mean like get a big, huge name. And then I'll just do that myself. And I'll be like, hey, Chris and Dave, it's so sad that you guys couldn't make it. Look who I got on the show.
Well, you're going to need to do that because, you know, I'm not going to be as lenient next time.
I see. That.
All right. But anyway, let's get into some beat writer articles. And we're going to start with an article about Jeff McNeil, who has been red hot lately. He, you know, had another couple home runs this week, had a great series in Coors Field. And there was an article by Tim Britton of The Athletic with winning hit. Mets Jeff McNeil keeps showing off new offensive identity. And it starts out by talking about the adjustments that McNeil made in the second half of last season. Mm-hmm. McNeil was, as many know, a contact, you know, a high average guy, a guy who could put the ball in play, almost like a poor man's Luis Arias, right? Not a lot of power. I think a lot of people had even written him off. I mean, he was, you know, last year was 32, like was losing playing time. I know he wasn't even on the fantasy radar at that point. And then in the second half, he just made an approach change that I think has dramatically changed who he is as a player. In the article, he says, quote, I'm just trying to hit it hard, you know, nothing like revolutionary here. But, you know, he says, I'm not trying to guide the ball out there. So I think, you know, he had that great contact ability and like that was his calling card, right? Was just to put the ball in play. But it's very obvious now that he's taken this approach where he wants to put the ball in the air and put it in the air to the pull side, which has dramatically improved his power output.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a wild stat, guys. I couldn't believe it when I looked this up. Since the All-Star break of last year, McNeil has the 13th best OPS in all of MLB. Now, this is a minimum of 200 plate appearances. He has, He has almost 300 plate appearances since that time. So it's less than a lot of other players, but still, like, he's in company with like Alonso, Freeman, not too far behind Yordan Alvarez, like, you know, like big superstar players. And then all of a sudden you see Jeff McNeil in there. Mm-hmm. It's pretty shocking. And I mean, what he's doing, so he's really just carried over what he did at the end of last season into this season. He was injured at first, but now he's hit his stride. He started 10 straight games, bouncing back and forth between second base and center field. The bat speed for him is up almost 2 ticks this season compared to last. Last season was at 68.8. This season it's at 70.6. He's got more walks than strikeouts. Fellas, I've laid out the case for Jeff McNeil. I mean, I you know my answer at this point, but he's only 28% rostered in CBS right now. Do you think that number should be significantly higher?
I do. I like the changes that he's made, and I always like to look for these types of changes in players because I like when they become aware of who they are and what they should be doing. One of the parts of this article that I liked was that he realized that he was hitting pitches that weren't ideal. He said he was hitting pitchers' pitches, but now he's just waiting for those fastballs. And that's a good decision-making process there to know when to swing and what to swing at. So I really like what he's doing. I don't know if this is just a hot streak or not, but like you laid out a pretty good case that since last year, this would be quite the hot streak if it was just a hot streak. My only worry with him is that I know he's good when he's healthy. I just don't know if he can stay healthy. Mm-hmm. He had the torn UCL. He had the oblique. I'm worried that swinging harder might actually re-trigger that oblique, but that might also be me just nitpicking.
That's Dave being Dave.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
It's a Dave thing. So overall though, I would take a chance on him and I'd ride it out for as long as it can go.
Mike, rest of season. I had someone ask me this question a couple days ago on Twitter and I gave an answer that I kind of regret now, but I'm going to ask you. He asked me, rest of season, would you rather have Jeff McNeil or Royal second baseman Jonathan India?
Yeah, McNeil for sure. I mean,
you think so? Okay.
The thing is, I always like Jonathan India, but he's not really putting anything together here that looks sustainable in a good way. You know, he's like very inconsistent all year. Even though I love the fact that he's hitting leadoff in that lineup most nights, McNeil looks like a guy that can really kind of keep this going. It's interesting when you were talking about him, and I was looking at his spray charts on Statcast and how different they are from what they were 2 years ago. You know, he's got a very pull heavy approach, especially in the air, as you pointed out, but he's still not striking out. He's striking out less than he's ever struck out before. So the changes that he's making seem to be working. And what I like about this for him is that he's hitting up a higher in the lineup behind Pete Alonso. And he really looks like playing time is kind of a sure thing. I mean, if you look at who's on the Mets bench, you know better than I do. Being a New Yorker and following these teams. I mean, they've got Acuna, they've got Jared Young, they've got Starling Marte on their bench. Like, he's really at no risk of losing playing time here. I really like him. I think that this is a good bet for the rest of the year.
The playing time, if he keeps hitting like this, what can you do, right? Like, the Mets can't take him out of the lineup. Now, he's going to continue at this pace? Most likely not. I think it does become a little bit of a tricky situation when Vientos comes back. You know, so you're going to have Vientos, Mauricio, McNeil, you know, Acuna, Marte, Beatty. Like, they've got a lot of pieces there that are, you know, can play different positions. So I think the only risk with McNeil is if he slows down a little bit, I think you could see him starting to lose at bats to left-handers like he was initially, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the most likely outcome, but I think if he's available in your league, you know, Vientos, I don't know, Dave, do you know when he's scheduled to come back? Another week or two?
I'd have to look up specifics, but, I don't think it was as serious as it was first believed, but, I think you are right that once he does come back, there's going to be some playing time issues there because they are pretty, like, they've got a lot of great options.
Loaded.
They're gonna send Beatty down.
I don't know, man. He's hitting really well, playing good defense.
Not in June. He had a really good May, but he's hitting .135 in June.
Okay.
I'm
remembering that hot stretch and kind of haven't been paying as close attention since.
Well, then, and his strikeouts are up too this month. Yeah. He's 11 strikeouts and 37 at bats. So, okay. That would be my guess. I mean, the reason why I'm looking at that is because I have Beatty in a couple places where right when he came up and was hot, I had him, and now I got to look to replace him this weekend.
Vientos was jogging and hitting a couple days ago, and it's a low grade hamstring strain. So, yeah, probably not as serious as long of an absence as we might think.
Yeah.
So,
but I think just one last, and then we'll move on. But I think McNeil is a pickup in 12s, just to kind of ride this out and see where it goes. I mean, that's such the change in approach to going very pull heavy in the air. I think a lot of, like, that can fly under the radar for a lot of people when someone makes a swing change like that. And just to give you stats to back that up, he's hitting the ball in the air 44% of the time and pulling it 52% of the time, or 53% of the time rather. So, you know, obviously he doesn't have the greatest raw power, probably below average raw power, but when you can consistently get your swing in that plane, you're going to do damage, which he certainly has been doing. But let's talk about someone else who's been doing damage over the past week, and that's Evan Carter. So Dave, you had posted this on our Twitter account. You can follow us on Twitter, by the way, at Fantasy Beat. You've been doing a great job, by the way, with posting articles on there. Thank you for that. And you found a good one today called "The Mental Growth Behind Carter's Current Tear" by Kennedy Landry of MLB.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I know we talked about McNeil and the changes he's making, but I also like it when players make these mental changes and awareness. And so it talked about how Evan Carter, how, you know, he felt like he was on top of the world at the end of 2023. He was a playoff hero. He was so young. And he thought maybe he might have been a little full of himself. So he struggled to start in 2024. And then he had a lower back injury, which turned into a stress reaction. And then that ended up costing him the season because it needed an ablation procedure. So for him, it was pretty much a humbling experience. The whole season was just a disaster. And then when he came back, he admitted that he was trying to do more than he should have been capable of doing. He was just getting ahead and just not doing what he should really be doing and who he was. And then he admitted he was also down on himself because it was just one thing after another, and he even questioned his future. But now he's back, he's having fun, he's being himself, and he's in a great state of mind. He's looked fantastic since he's come back. And the most impressive thing for me is this kind of mental maturity, and he's just 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Evan Carter. I loved him at the beginning of the season as a nice bounce back. I love what I'm seeing right here. And I don't want to say the sky's the limit for him, but man, he is looking really good, and he's igniting this entire Rangers team right now.
I like this optimistic Dave. I mean, the sky's the limit. You've already, you know, like I see a new side to you, Dave. This is wonderful to see. Usually you're the angel of death telling us about all the injuries. And so this is great. But Evan Carter just seems like that classic post-hype breakout guy. Remember, this was someone who was a top, you know, depending on what you look at, but like a top 20-ish prospect, right? Fangraphs had him a top 13 prospect in all of baseball. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us, myself included, have kind of forgotten about him. I didn't even consider him once during draft season. You know, the injuries, the back stuff. I'm like, I don't want to mess with a guy with a bad back at 22. You know, like, that just doesn't sound good. But he... let's see if he could actually stay healthy. But this has been a really nice stretch for him. Hit another bomb today, stolen base. So he's giving you a nice power speed combo. I put this here, and at first it sounded silly, but then when I looked at the rest of season projections, it's actually closer than you may think. My question to you, Mike, is Evan Carter or Roman Anthony rest of season?
Oof. Boy, you know, that's a really tough one. Wow. I'm gonna stick with Carter on this one, I think, just because he's got a little bit of a track record, and I feel like we have a little bit of a roadmap of what to expect. Although I will say this, I did have the Roman Anthony's debut game on in the background while I was doing stuff the other night, and he looks like he belongs. I know that he's only gotten one hit so far, and he looks like a baseball player, if that makes any sense. But I'm going to take Carter just to err on the, you know, the safe side here. I think Anthony down the road is going to be an absolute superstar, but I don't know what that's going to look like at age 21. You know, yeah. Hard to know.
Yeah, and you're probably partial to the last name as well. I get it. But yeah, their projections are almost identical. You know, and what's funny about it is, like, if they were both available in Fab, I mean, Anthony's probably gone in most leagues. Well, yeah, you could just look at the rostership percentages. I don't have them in front of me, but I would imagine Anthony is a lot more owned than Evan Carter. And if he was available in Fab, Roman Anthony, like in a NFBC like main event, would probably go for like $400, you know, right. Whereas Evan Carter may go for, I don't know, $50. And it's just amazing how we kind of value these guys. Even if the projections say they're the same, it's the shiny new toy syndrome, right? Amen. Roman Anthony is the unlimited potential, you know? So we're going to go crazy and try to bet on that upside. So
in Yahoo, Roman Anthony
behind the game is just, I find fascinating.
Sorry. In Yahoo, Roman Anthony is 65% owned. And okay. To your point, Evan Carter is 21%.
Yeah. So, let me look at that. That's
It's crazy.
Yeah. But anyway, we are going to talk about the Pope. Let's talk about the Pope.
Let's talk about the Pope. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how much fantasy relevance this discussion is going to have, but I mean, we've got the Pope wearing a White Sox hat. And there was an article about this on MLB.com called "Confirmed Fan Pope Leo Wears White Sox Hat at Vatican" by Jason Foster and Scott Merkin, a friend of the show. And I just think that's just so cool. I'm like excited for you, Mike. Like you had obviously as rough a season as any fan could have last year. But you've got a man who has a direct line of communication to God, who now is a proclaimed White Sox fan. You've got some nice young players coming up. You've got Kyle Teal. You're showing signs of life. Mm-hmm. Like things are turning around. So I just have to get your thoughts on all of this. The team looking better. Pope Leo, tell me, how are you feeling right now?
Well, first off, I want you to pay attention that I took out my Southside t-shirt. This is this is something that only somebody from the Southside can wear. So I've resurrected it. See what I did there? I resurrected it.
Yeah, see what you did, yeah.
To coincide with our conversation about the White Sox, because I will tell you this. The White Sox are doing things differently. I've talked about this, and nobody wants to listen. I am right about this. Getting Brian Bannister and Josh Barfield into the farm system to change what they were doing pitching-wise and hitting-wise is starting to pay dividends. The White Sox are a watchable baseball team again. Notice I did not say good. They're watchable again.
Yeah, but that's a big step.
Yeah, they're doing things the right way. So people, you know, Kyle Teal getting called up was really a bit of a surprise, but he looks the part too. He gets on base. He hits the ball the other way. He can catch. One of the things that I would like people to consider, you know, I write on Rotoballer about, you know, players that are low rostered on Yahoo. And there's a couple of guys that the White Sox have that could actually really be helpful to people. One being Chase Meidroth, who is completely flying under the radar in a lot of leagues, and he should not be. I know this. If you look at the stat cast, you'll be like, okay, yeah, right, Mike, whatever. There's a lot of blue, whatever. Doesn't strike out. He gets on base via the walk. He's stealing bases. He's hitting 296. He's got 8 stolen bases. He's playing a really good shortstop for them, even though when he came up, it looked like he was going to play second base, but the Sox don't have a shortstop. And so Meidroth took that spot over, and it's been quiet. You haven't heard anybody say that they don't have a shortstop again now. But guys like Meidroth and Miguel Vargas and Kyle Teal are guys that strike out at really low rates, walk at high rates, and are putting the bat to the ball. In fact, I bet you neither one of you knew this. Chuck Garfine tweeted out today. He's one of the White Sox cover reporters on the TV station. Mentioned today that the White Sox are leading all of baseball in walks over the last 2 weeks. So they're finding ways to get on base. They're finding ways to get guys over. They're not hitting a lot of home runs, but they're scoring more runs. And their pitching staff is better than what people think it is. Shane Smith is a name that you should know if you don't know. He's been really, really good. He's a Rule 5 pick that they got, and they put him in. He's really been their ace. And has been consistent every time he's been out, you know, 5 or 6 strikeouts, holding teams to 1 or 2 runs almost every time he's out there. Davis Martin has been good. So what they're doing is really biding time, because they're going to trade Luis Robert as soon as he looks like he can play baseball again. He actually looks a little bit more invigorated the last week since they're showing signs of life. He made a couple of really nice plays in the outfield, hit a 2-run homer the other night. They're going to get rid of him. They'll get rid of Davis Martin. Anybody that's got value that's not tied down, they're going to get rid of. But the other night, they had 7 rookies make a difference in that game against Houston. They beat Houston. And Grant Taylor, who is a guy that I've mentioned on the show before, is another guy that we should probably put a circle around, because he's going to be their closer at some point this year. His first pitch that he threw in the major leagues this week was 101.5 miles an hour. So a lot of people don't know that, because he got hurt when he was at LSU. But when he was at LSU, he was the number one starter before Skeens got there. Now, obviously, Skeens became Skeens, and Grant Taylor tore his UCL. It's been a long time coming back, but they've put him in the bullpen. The White Sox like to do this with those high-profile arms that they draft. They did it with Chris Sale. They did it with Mark Burley. They did it with Garrett Crochet. So they're kind of following that playbook on this. But the White Sox, I don't want to say they're exciting. It's exciting to me because of the fact that they've been so bad for the last 3 years. But it's exciting to see that they have guys that look like they know how to play baseball a little bit, which is sort of fun for me.
Who do you think is Pope Leo's favorite player?
Oh, that's easy. It's Raisel Iglesias for sure. Iglesias means church in Spanish.
Right.
And Christian,
well, what about on the White Sox, though?
Well, Christian Encarnacion Strand. I mean, who doesn't love him? Dave Funnel loves CES.
I do.
He does.
Do you think he's more of a do you think he's a Luis Robert guy? Or
No, I don't think so. No, I think the Pope is, you know, the area that he's from is a very blue-collar, roll-up-your-sleeves, bring-your-lunch-pail-to-work kind of
Meidroth guy.
He's a Meidroth guy, probably, because that's how Meidroth is. I think Teal's got a little bit of that dog in him, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you got to get the Pope on when we're away. There's your guest.
Oh, my God. Well, how great. You know, that would be amazing, wouldn't it? Be like, hey, Pope Leo 14, just wanted to say thanks for joining us tonight. Oh, wait, Chris and Dave can't be here.
That might be some numbers. Yeah. That might be our our episode with Jason Beck. Just
I'll bet you both $5. I'll bet you I could get his phone number by the end of the month.
$5?
I know people.
You know people.
Yeah, the Southsiders. Oh my God, wouldn't that be great? And how much money would you give me if I called him by his real first name, Bob?
It's just still so bizarre to think, like, it, when I see pictures of him too, I'm like, it's just crazy. Like, the Pope, you just don't think is, like, first of all, an American, right? And like, just a dude from Chicago who went to Villanova. Like, it just doesn't compute, you know. I don't know. But the memes are great. The memes have been great since that happened. But getting back to what you were saying, seriously, with some of these White Sox, like, they've got actually fantasy relevant pieces. And
yes,
you know, I wanted to just highlight Miguel Vargas, who I was kind of out on. I was totally out on. I was totally out on him. Figured, you know, he didn't really do anything with the Dodgers, and he goes to the, you know, the moribund White Sox, and he looked depressed last year being there. I'm like, this guy, he may never recover from this. And I remember I was busting our buddy Nathan Grimm, his chops, because he's a big Miguel Vargas guy for years. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, mm-hmm. what do you see in him? I don't understand. Do you like that he can't hit? Like, is this what is? But I mean, I've been completely wrong. I already told him I'm taking the L on that one. If you look at all the underlying stats, he's another. We were talking about pulled fly balls before. He's hitting the ball in the air probably a little more than you'd mm-hmm. like, a 56% rate, which can hurt the batting average. But he's pulling it in the air, and the pull rate is at 41%. So that's a nice combo right there. So he's going to another guy who doesn't have great raw power. But if he's pulling the ball in the air like that, he's going to, I think, be an asset in that category. He chips in some stolen bases. Average is probably going to be around 250-ish. If you look at rest of season projections, Miguel Vargas actually rates out pretty highly based on mm-hmm. what he's shown so far. So not a guy that probably a lot of people are on, especially in like 12-teamers. I have him in an OC, which is a 12-teamer. He's got position flexibility, first, third, and outfield. Mm-hmm. I think he's a useful piece.
Yeah, he puts the bat on the ball, he doesn't strike out. He doesn't chase. I'm telling you, the White Sox are going for a profile with hitters now. They need to have somebody. This is what they're going to do. I'm going to predict this right now. They're going to let these guys play all year and pray to God that none of them, and you have the Pope pray for us that none of these guys get hurt. They'll trade a couple of spare pieces that they have that, you know, get something for them. And then in the offseason, they're going to surprise everybody and they're going to sign some big hitter. And you're going to go, oh, wait, that totally makes sense. Like they're going to try to get somebody that can bop a little bit. Right. So they got these guys that can get on base. But what's missing is that thumper. You know, they're not going to get a guy like Alonso or Tucker, but a guy that can hit like that is a guy that they really could use. And they don't have it in the system. Not yet. I mean, Brayden Montgomery could be that guy down the road. I mean, that guy looks like he's going to be a player, but you know, he's still a young man. They need somebody in there that can kind of come in there and thump in the middle of that lineup.
I love to see excitement, man. Love to see you back with the passion for the Chicago White Sox.
It's fun. It's fun. Like, they're not going to win a lot of games. They're going to play better than what they've won 5 of their last 8, which around here is like, you know, it's like the Yankees, you know what I mean? Like we're like, wow, this is great. And the night, did you guys know that the night that Teal got called up, they sold out the stadium? The people have been waiting for this. They've been waiting for a reason to get excited. And they have a little bit of reason to start getting a little bit cautiously optimistic. I wouldn't say excited. But let's just see where it goes and let those guys play a little bit. What you said about Vargas is spot on. I agreed with Nathan at the time, too, if you recall, because I said, look, this is a guy that he just needs to play. Just leave him alone. Just mm-hmm. don't talk to him. Don't point at him. Just let him play. He's played third base. Then when Vaughn was terrible, they put him over at first base. He's done everything without complaining. He just keeps playing.
Yeah. All right. We are going to take a quick commercial break. We will be back to talk some sell high and buy low players. All right, we are back. So we're going to start with some players that have gotten off to some fast starts that we think you should be selling high on. And not, you know, this isn't a completely original segment, but hopefully this can be helpful. And I think there's some names on here that people may be a little surprised by. So we're going to talk today first, because I haven't heard from you. Mike was so amped up about the White Sox, you know. So we just had to.
I'm just so happy that I'm still on the show. I thought I was getting kicked out. Yeah, no,
everything is kind of working out for you right now, Mike.
Yeah.
But Dave, tell us who your sell high player is. I was a little surprised to see this one, but let's see what you got.
All right. Yeah, my sell high guy right now is Cal Raleigh. I think he's been great, and he's helped me and my teams, and I absolutely love him. But his looking within the numbers, some things just it's a career season, and I just don't know if he can continue it based off his history. So his 256 batting average right now, it's higher than any other year's batting average or XBA. He's got a career high walk rate at 13.5. Career low K rate at 26.4. It's hard to sustain, you know, power any time higher than 26.4 and maintain a batting average like that. And he's got 7 stolen bases so far. I don't know where they came from, but he's got them.
The dumper.
He's
The dumper with seven
big stolen dumper.
Bases. Yeah.
Big dumper. Yeah.
He's got a career best batting average against all types of pitches as well. So he's just mashing and seeing everything. I know he got one of those torpedo bats midway through, I think it was April, and he's been on fire ever since. He leads the league in pulled air rate as well, 38.8%. So he's just driving that ball and it's in the air and he's hitting it hard. So he's got career highs everywhere. He's likely going to the home run derby. I don't know how that's going to affect him with fatigue possibly afterwards. If I have him right now, I would try and sell high if people need a catcher. You might be able to get, if it's a one catcher league, you might be able to get a catcher to replace him and a piece. Or if you're in a two catcher league and you can afford to, you get another catcher and something else to help you up. But I'd be looking to sell high right now. I just don't know how long these career numbers can sustain themselves.
All right. Sell high for Dave is Cal Raleigh. Mike, who do you got?
You're probably going to be surprised by this one too, because it's a guy that I love and I drafted all over, and that's Pete Crow Armstrong. And the reason why I say that is that, and I, at the risk of sounding sacrilegious, see what I did there? A whole religion episode here for me. PCA, as he's referred to here in Chicago, is showing some signs of cracking in the veneer here. He started off the season obviously not great, and then in April he was phenomenal. He had 312, 6 home runs, 19 RBIs, 11 steals. Follow that up in June with 9 more home runs. In May, 9 home runs and 29 RBIs. But the strikeout rate started to creep up and the steals went down. He stole 5 bases in May. Why do I keep saying that? It's middle of June right now. But in 108 at-bats, he struck out 34 times. And that's a little concerning. So let's fast forward to June. He's down to 263. Not that that's bad. He's got a couple of home runs. The steals are down to 4, but all 4 of those were the first 2 games of the month. And he has struck out 9 times in 38 at-bats against only 2 walks. What I'm worried about here is that the league is starting to catch up. And I did a little bit of diving around today. Not that I had a ton of time to be able to do that, but I started looking at how the league is pitching him. And it was pretty interesting to see that the pitch percentage, if you look at the pitch percentage, he's getting fewer fastballs now than he had been in other years. He's played part of 2 seasons, obviously, with the Cubs here. But if we take a look at what's going on with this season in particular, you notice that he's really starting to get fooled and start striking out and chasing more on other pitches. And so the K percentage is going up, especially on off-speed stuff. So in May, his percentage of strikeouts on off-speed stuff was 5.3. Now, granted, that's a month-long sample size. But right now, in June, it's 33.3%. That's a huge jump. And so I'm a little concerned that maybe while the season's been great, that maybe he's showing some signs of the swing and miss that we know is there, and that batting average could crater. You know, this guy could be easily a 230 hitter if that kind of keeps going. I mean, his XBA right now is 263. He's at 271 overall, but that's been dropping consistently over the last couple of weeks. Now, obviously, the glove and the speed are going to continue to play. We know that, but, you know, his K percentage is rising. His walk percentage is less than 5%. His chase percentage is 44%, guys. So it seems to me as if the league might be starting to figure out Mr. PCA a little bit. And if there's somebody who really recognizes, especially a Cubs fan, who thinks that he's the second coming, you might want to think about trading him for something that you could really use. I'm considering it in leagues where I have him. If I get a good offer, I would move him, especially if I could get a pitcher. For the love of God, all my pitchers are in the infirmary. Don't even talk to me, Dave. Don't look at me. Don't say a word.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. He's got a lot of name brand recognition right now, a lot of hype. Sometimes I hear like these sell high segments you know, or someone will ask about a player, like, should I sell Heinen? It's like, dude, no one wants that player, you know, like people are going to see through that. Whereas PCA, even Cal Raleigh before, these are guys that right now, like, you've gotten so much hype that if you put an offer out there, looking, you know, that these guys are on the block, you're going to get some people interested. So I think good calls on both of them. I think another guy, the one that I chose, not as quite as big name value as the other two, but I think has gotten a lot of hype, and that's Jacob Wilson. I think a lot of people are starting to notice what he's doing, you know, and putting up an amazing average. But we kind of knew, everybody knew the hit tool was there, right? Another guy who we kind of thought, hey, he's Luis Arraez. You know, everybody we compare to Luis Arraez, who's, you know, who hits for average and not much else. But he's been surprising in terms of his overall production, giving us 8 home runs. And let me just double check the stolen bases. If I'm not mistaken, he's got, okay, 5 stolen bases. So giving you more category juice than I think most people expected to go along with that .366 average. But I really do think the power is a little bit of a mirage. He's got the 8 home runs on only 7 barrels. So usually it works out that your amount of home runs is about 50% of your barrels. So for 8 home runs, he should have, you know, on average, like 16 barrels.
Right.
Usually that's an indication of pretty good luck. He doesn't have good raw power. I mean, max EV is 108.5. According to StatCast, his hard hit percentage is only 26%. So there's nothing in the profile that indicates all of a sudden he gained all this power. So I think we're going to see a big downturn there. I think the average will still be there, but I don't think he's going to be a .366 hitter. So if he hits, you know, 300 the rest of the way, but doesn't give you much power. He's also dealing with a little bit of a hamstring issue right now. Has never been a guy that stole many bases. So if he slows down there, I think he really could be just an empty average moving forward. And I think given what he already has done so far, you could get more for him, you know, if you offered him in a trade right now. So that is my sell high. But let's talk about some buy low players now. And I'm going to circle back to Dave. Who do you got as far as a player that we should be looking to acquire right now?
Right now, I'm looking to buy low on Josh Lowe. Is it Lowe or Lau? Lowe, right?
Lowe. Okay. Confused. Yeah,
Brandon Lau, Josh Lowe.
Yeah.
Okay. Correct. So right now, his stat line, it's very underwhelming. It's 3 home runs, 4 stolen bases, .239. But he's still under 100 at-bats, and this is for a guy who missed all of spring training. So some stats that I do like, some numbers that I like, on the road, he's hitting .262 as opposed to, I think it's like .200 or something at home. The Rays are going to be on the road a lot this summer because of the schedule finagling that the league did because of the weather there. His XBA right now is .286. And if he qualified, that would put him in the top 20 of XBA differences. So a higher XBA compared to his lower batting average. Last year, he missed time. He still finished with 10 home runs, 25 RBIs. Or sorry, stolen bases and a .241 average, which wasn't bad. A year prior to that was what we thought was his breakout, 20 home runs, 32 stolen bases, .292. He's got the lowest K rate and the highest walk rate of his career. He's going to cost you nothing, I think, in a trade because people might look at his stats and want out. So I'd be trying to buy in and see if you can catch lightning.
All right. Dave's got Josh Lowe as his buy low. Mike, who are you targeting in a trade right now?
I really like Corey Seager. I always have liked Corey Seager. And if you look at his stats right now, there were some funny tweets that were going around today about the Rangers scoring 16 runs and people thinking that Corey Seager finally broke out. And he didn't. He was 0 for 3. But here's the thing. If you look at Corey Seager's StatCast page, you'll be a little bit surprised. The top half of it is all blood red. And he's got some blue looking further down, but he's hitting .238 right now with 6 home runs and 159 plate appearances, which is very meh. But if you look at what he's supposed to be hitting, his expected batting average, I haven't found a difference this high in a long time. His expected batting average is .296. So there's definitely been some bad luck there. This is a guy over the course of the last few seasons that's hit 30 home runs consistently with a really high batting average. He's not going to help you with steals. We know that. He'll help you in OBP leagues for sure. He's going to score some runs. You know, I think a lot of people are kind of throwing the towel in on him because they're looking at other shortstops, like you mentioned, Jacob Wilson, who are having really good years so far, and they're kind of discounting the fact that Seager's probably still got another 320 at-bats in him, at least, right? And, you know, 350 at-bats maybe if he stays healthy. I know health is always a thing with him, but this guy barrels up the baseball, 14.7% barrel percentage, 52.3% hard hit percentage. Average exit velocity is 93 miles an hour, which puts him in the 92nd percentile. It's just a matter of time until these things start falling in for him.
All right, Corey Seager, buy low for Mike. My guy is Brenton Doyle. Now Brenton Doyle has gone through some awful, awful personal issues off the field. And, you know, when I saw he was batting under 200, I'm like, okay, it makes sense. Like this guy,
sure.
For those of you who don't know him and his wife, I believe had a miscarriage, and it just, you could imagine like that's going to impact your play on the field. So I kind of just chalked it up to that. But then when I looked deeper at the numbers, Brenton Doyle pretty much has displayed the same skills that he did last year. The guy has just been getting super, super unlucky. Right now, actually, he's gotten the batting average up to .208. Expected batting average, however, is .247. Mm-hmm. He's hitting the ball still. Last season, it was 37%. This year, it's 38%, according to Fangraphs. Making good contact, 87%. Zone contact percentage. His expected slugging is .424, where his actual slugging is .335. So he's due for some major regression there. I really think this is a guy that once, you know, luck starts going his way, he's going to be a legit five category guy. I know the Rockies aren't the best lineup, but still, you're getting half of your games in Coors Field. So this is someone that I think is probably, you know, you could probably get pretty cheaply. And just to drive the point home, if you pull up his rest of season bat X projection and just plug that into like an auction calculator, he comes out as the 51st overall player, not just hitter, overall player rest of season based on his projection, which is 14 home runs, 16 stolen bases, a .260 average the rest of the way. So I'm not saying that's gospel, but I think it's a good indicator. And, you know, I'm pretty sure you're not going to have to pay the price of a top 50 player if you're going out and trying to acquire Brenton Doyle. So we will leave it there for that segment. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with some bullpen talk with Mike. All right. We got the man. You know, this is partially why we had to keep you around. I mean, you are the bullpen guy. We need your expertise, especially. I mean, it's every year is crazy with bullpens. I mean, it's the nature of it. Of course, there's been, you know, a lot of madness this year. So I want to help our listeners get out ahead of things, though, because we know the closers that have lost their job. But what I want us to look forward, and I'm going to ask you, who is the next capital C closer that you think, Mike, is going to lose his job in the near future?
I think it's Raisel Iglesias if he hasn't already lost it anyway. I mean, I think the only thing that really saves him there is that they don't really have anybody else that they feel comfortable using in the role. I mean, if you go back to last weekend, Iglesias has only pitched once this week. He threw 8 pitches on Monday night, and that's it. His ERA is 6.5. His strikeout rate is a fairly paltry 24% for him. He just doesn't look like the same guy. He's really struggling to be able to locate his pitches. He's still got really high chase percentages, and he doesn't walk a lot of guys, which is sort of saving him, but it's really been ugly. They used Pierce Johnson last week in a couple of an attempt to try to get a save on Saturday, and he, of course, blew the save and lost the game. So I think there is kind of an interesting situation because the Braves are really disappointing, and their bullpen doesn't really resemble anything that we're used to seeing from them. Dylan Lee is a guy there that could get an opportunity, I guess. He's probably better than Pierce Johnson, although Pierce Johnson has experience. Aaron Bummer is there too. He's had some closer experience. I don't know. This team just looks like they're really in chaos right now. So if I had to pick, I would say Iglesias for the next guy to fall out.
I feel like that's such a motley crew, man. Mm-hmm. Those guys you just named, I can't imagine, like, unless Iglesias, I don't know, like maybe they take him out of the role. I mean, what do I know? But, you know, maybe they take him out of the role for a little bit, but I just can't imagine like Dylan Lee or Aaron Bummer becomes like a capital C closer if Iglesias is healthy. I don't know. Maybe he's pitching injured and we'll find out that, you know, there's something going on with him. But it is ugly in Atlanta, and Craig Kimbrell couldn't even save them.
Right.
In one game. All right. You had one other one here. Who else you have is someone who you think is going to lose their job?
Philadelphia, for a team that is really playing pretty well for the most part, really has a bit of a mess of a bullpen too. I mean, they want Jordan Romano to be the closer, but he really doesn't seem to want the job. He keeps trying to hand it off. He took a loss last weekend, and then on Wednesday night, Matt Strom blew another save, and then Taijuan Walker blew another game the next night. So they've got a lot of problems there, and they don't really have a clear-cut situation. I mean, with Alvarado on the restricted list, Orion Kerkerine is a guy that's there, but he really doesn't look like he's a closer at this point. They really use him a lot in that setup role. Rob Thomson uses him all the time. So they might be stuck with Romano and Strom and trying to kind of sort through it, but neither one of them have been really great. I mean, Strom's been better than Romano, but Romano just looks lost. I mean, he'll have one outing where he's dominant and gets three outs on eight pitches, and the next time he can't get anybody out, you know. So they've got trouble there. They're going to have to address that. But here's the question: what closers are going to be available for them to be able to get at the trade deadline? That remains to be seen. But it might not be a very robust closer market at the trade deadline.
What is David Robertson doing these days? I don't understand. There's so many teams right now that could use a guy like him in the closer role.
Yeah, I think what he's doing is waiting. I think he's waiting to see who's
into June. Like, he's got to get established somewhere, right, and ramp up, I would think.
Yeah, you know, historically, though, the thing that's interesting about Robertson, though, and you're totally right. I mean, conventional wisdom says, yes, you're absolutely right. He's 40. He doesn't need a lot of time to get ready. He's probably been throwing in anticipation of waiting to see who's going to have an opening. I think what he's doing is waiting to see who's really serious come July 1st in terms of who's really going to be in it for the playoffs, and then he's going to go there. He's not going to go to some team that's not got a shot to win the whole thing. You know, the Cubs are looking like they could use some help. Texas obviously is screaming out for help. You know, there's a number of teams I think that could be looking for. Philadelphia would be a good fit for him too. He could still really throw, you know, so I think that's what he's really waiting for. Yeah, he was really good last year.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's just driving me. Like, every day I'm like anticipating that notification, like David Robertson signs. And it's just, I've been waiting on that for now, you know, 3 months. And it's just like, okay, I guess maybe he's just comfortable and he's just like, screw it. I'm chilling. But all right, we're going to leave it there for baseball stuff. We're going to go to our final segment here, which is our mental health minute. Anybody who's listening for the first time, this is where we spend a few minutes talking about anything mental health related. Sometimes we bring topics. Sometimes we talk about personal things that we're doing to maintain our overall wellness and physical and mental health. This week, we're going to do a little bit different. And, you know, all three of us are dads. And, you know, we talk offline about things going on with our kids. And I think, you know, I imagine there's a good percentage of people who listen to the show who are also parents. So we're going to spend our mental health minute this week talking about some challenges that we have faced recently as parents and basically how we've been dealing with them. So I'm going to toss it to you first, Dave. And again, if you could just tell our listeners something that you've dealt with as a parent and kind of how you've been able to overcome that or manage it recently.
Yeah. So for me, I've got two boys that are, you know, in their teens or just about to be in their teens. And an issue that I've had recently is just knowing when to intervene, meaning when they have problems or situations, or even when they have priorities that they're ignoring, it's when to intervene. Do I, you know, hold their hand the whole time and show them how it's done? Or do I let them try, fail for a bit, then figure out a way that they can, you know, work it out themselves and learn that way? So it's been pretty difficult because I've got two different boys who are completely different. I've got one who's in high school right now, and he's got like this big workload of exams and assignments coming up over the next 2 weeks. And I kind of let him have his time last week to see if he was able to, you know, do what he was supposed to do. He didn't. So yesterday we had to actually sit down, and I just showed him, you know, if you plan this out and you have this and on one day, you can accomplish this one day, this another day, compartmentalize it, just break it up into little pieces, just showing him that it's okay to feel a little overwhelmed, but when you spread it out, it's not going to be that bad, but you got to apply yourself and you got to work with it. And then my other child, he's got ADHD and he's got ODD. So getting him, you know, with responsibilities and with branching himself out there and, you know, making friends and keeping friends, he doesn't want to do anything. He likes to be home. He likes to be us. But, you know, I've signed him up to be some leader in training at some camp for the summer. So for four weeks, he's going to be out there with little kids and playing. And he hated it at first last year, but then he had the time of his life. But then getting him to do it again this year has been a challenge. But I want him to branch out, and I want him to, you know, find friends on his own. But on the other hand, it's just eventually you got to step in there and show them the way and then let them go and be themselves.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's such a delicate balance that you try to strike because, yeah, you don't want to solve their problems or take on too much because then they don't know how to do things for themselves. Right. But you also don't want to let them completely flounder and, you know, and then that can be damaging, right? Because of those negative experiences. So yeah, it's definitely a tough balance to strike. I'm sure there are parents out there listening who can, I know I can identify with what you're sharing, and I'm sure there are others who can as well. Mike, what about you? How, what challenges have you been facing recently?
It's interesting because I'll kind of echo what Dave said. I mean, mine's a little different just in the fact that I have two teenagers as well. My daughter is 18, just turned 18, and is getting ready to go to college here in a couple of months. And my son Jack is, you know, graduated from eighth grade and getting ready to start high school journey here in a couple of months. And so we've got two at different ends of the thing, both starting something new. And for me, the hard part has been balancing their need for independence and allowing them to explore some things on their own with my parental instinct to constantly protect and constantly solve problems. That's my job on a daily basis. Right. I solve problems. I've been doing it for a really long time. The problems come across, I solve them. But when you're talking about your children, you have to be able to give them the tools that they can use to be able to learn how to do some of the stuff on their own. So, for example, Ellie had orientation at University of Illinois yesterday. So we drove down on Tuesday night. We're down there all day yesterday. Of course, it's the one day of the summer that it chooses to be 92 degrees, and I'm sweating like a hog, like I invented it.
Several 92 degrees is not.
Yeah,
not
no. Several costume changes for me throughout the day. But my point in bringing that up was the old me would have been like, okay, we're going to go get you registered for your classes. We're going to meet with the advisor, and I would have done it with her. And then they have it set up in such a way that you can't do that anymore, right? They're in college now. They have to take care of the stuff on their own. So my idea was, hey, let's go learn how to ride the bus. Let's go check out the dorm and do these things. But I have to let her do those things. I have to let her kind of figure those steps out. Like, she had a situation at work last week where there was a mentally ill adult who was sort of stalking her and another girl at the library where she works. And my first temptation is to go Denzel and Equalizer and go in there with the fungal bat and just start taking names, right? Like, that's what I want to do. Because I want to go down there and I'm just like, I'm seeing red and I'm going to go take care of it. However, she's an adult. So she needs to learn how to deal with the reporting of that and talking to the police and the steps that you take to do that. I can't do that for her, because if I do that for her, then I'm undercutting her and not allowing her to have that experience and learn from that experience about what there is to take from it. Same thing with Jack. Jack next week, you know, you guys know this because we talk all the time, but Jack has life-threatening food allergies. He's EpiPen dependent. So like when we go to a baseball game, we can't sit someplace where they have peanuts because I could kill him. Right. So he's going on this camp out next week with the Boy Scouts. Granted, a bunch of people that we've known for 5 or 6 years. I trust them clearly, but we're letting him go and manage his own food on that journey. Have talked to the people that are involved, the people that are working at the camp. It's up in Michigan. He's 4 hours away. This is a huge leap of faith for us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so I have to learn, like, if it were up to me, I would probably be not camping because I'm not sleeping in a tent at 51 years old, but I'd be in a hotel nearby, you know, if he needed me for something, and I would probably just waste a week. He has to learn how to manage this come hell or high water, no matter what the consequences of that might be, because I won't always be there to protect him. You know how hard that is for somebody like me that's type A and a control freak to let my kids do that, especially when you know that they're about to mess something up. You got to let them do it because that's the only way they're going to learn. If I save them from everything, they're never going to pick up on it. So that's really been where I've been the last few weeks. And that letting go, it is really hard for me because I look at my kids. I look at Ellie. I don't see an adult. I see her. She's 5 in my mind. She's not 5. You know, she's about to go out there and make a life on her own. And I don't know how much of a part of that I'm going to be moving forward. You know what I mean? That's really, really hard because I've put everything into my kids, everything. And so to prepare them, now the question that I'm asking myself on a daily basis is, did I do it right? Have I done enough? And I guess that will remain to be seen. But that's the joy of life, isn't it? Like, that's the joy of living, is we just don't know. We don't have answers to those questions. And we won't have data on that for a few years, right? It's like, what's the StatCast data going to tell me about my kids in 5 years?
Unfortunately, we don't have the StatCast.
Yeah, we don't.
Parenting.
Yeah, and so there's no roadmap for it. There's no guide for it. We've just all kind of got thrown into it and did it, you know? And it's been the pleasure of my life to be able to be the parents of those two kids because they're amazing, but it's really hard to let go.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be leaning on you guys because this actually was kind of what I wanted to talk about as well. My kids are younger than yours. My daughter is 9. My son is 5. And what I was going to talk about was, just my daughter. Like, my daughter's always been very mature for her age. Like, she's just always like, she's got an old soul. Like, everybody's said it since she was really little. I was too as a kid. So she's very similar to me. And she's 9 years old, and I swear she's 9 going on 16. And it's been a huge, she's in third grade now, and it's been a huge leap for her developmentally this past year. And some of the things that she's coming home with now, talking about, and you know, like things her friends are into, and, you know, I'm hearing stuff about boys and all this stuff. And I'm like, whoa. I was not ready. Like, you were a little girl playing with dolls like yesterday. And now you like want to put on makeup and, you know, you're talking about boys. Like, what just happened?
All of a sudden you've got Doja Cat living at your house. That's great.
She's talking to, she has all like, you know, the slang now, like all these slay, have you heard? Slay is the new, like,
all day, baby. Slay all day.
I had no idea, but now that's like, you know, part of her lingo. Like, it's just crazy. I'm having a tough time with that, to be honest. Just again, because how quickly it just seemed, like overnight it just seemed to change. Like, she took this step, and you know, she's dealing now with a lot of, like, you know, there's drama with girls at school, and, you know, kind of like what you guys were saying, like, I'm trying to navigate and figure out, like, how much do I help her solve these issues? You know, how, mm-hmm. what kind of role do I take? And the other night, and I'm kind of like you, Mike, like I'm a problem solver. That's always been the type of person that I am. And my first instinct, she was telling me, you know, some stuff with this girl who like said something that wasn't nice to her. And, you know, my first instinct was, and she had like all these stories and she kept bringing up. And like, at first I was trying to help her. Then I'm like, okay, I just need to take a step back and like take it easy. Cause like, we're not going to solve all this overnight, you know, and she right. needed to go to bed anyway. So I'm like, all right, we got to put an end to this. And I kind of ended by saying, listen, kiddo, like some of these things are part of life. You know, you're going to be figuring this stuff out as you go. And I'm going to be here to help you. But just know, you know, I can't solve everything for you, but I'm going to be here. You know, I'm going to be that steady presence for you. And you're not in this alone. You know, you have me. You have mommy. You have, you know, her grandma's Abba, or her other grandma's Mimi. You have like all, you have this tribe around you that is here to support you. And I felt like in that moment, just for her to hear that, it kind of like calmed her down.
That was the perfect answer, by the way. That was the perfect answer.
Really well done. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. And, you know, it just seemed like that was like just so reassuring for her. And that was kind of how, like, I was freaking out a little bit because I'm like, oh my God, like, this is just like, this is so much, you know, for her and like for me to hear all this. And I just like, how is she going to deal with this? And it kind of calmed myself down and her to just remind her, you are not alone. You know, you've got people here that have your back. So, but yeah, I mean, to be continued, I'm sure I'll be reaching out to you guys, getting advice. Cause you know, you've been through it and, it's not easy. You know,
it's a work in progress, boys. It's a work in progress.
We're all a work in progress and we're all going to make mistakes.
Take it one sleigh at a time.
One sleigh at a time. Yeah.
Sleigh all day.
Any parents who are out there who, you know, this discussion, it kind of resonates with them. They could relate to it or feel like they're going through a tough time with some of this stuff. Please, you know, we're a baseball show, but you can reach out to us. You know, we're just three regular dads who, you know, like, I mean, we love baseball, but we're much more than just, you know, fantasy baseball nerds. So if anybody needs support around that type of stuff and just needs, you know, someone to talk to about that, certainly our DMs are open. So
for sure,
we are going to leave it there. We'll be back next week. Who do we have next week, Mike?
Who we have lined up tentatively? Jake Rill is going to be on with us next week.
Nice. Awesome. Jake Rill talking Orioles. That'll be a really good episode. So looking forward to that. So stay tuned. But that is it for today. For Dave Funnel, for Mike Carter, I'm Chris Torres. Thank you for listening to Fantasy Baseball Beat.